Welcome to Sister Share, where six sisters living around the world come together each week to talk about motherhood, health, cooking, parenting, and so much more. Thanks for joining us today.
Welcome back to Sister Share. Thank you for joining us this week. We are six sisters who live around the world, and we visit about all topics related to raising children and motherhood. If you haven't yet, please like us on Instagram, Facebook, and also you can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or any other platform that shares podcasts. This week is part of a trilogy of episodes. Last week, we talked about healthy habits and helping children to eat good snacks throughout the day. And this is the second part of this trilogy of episodes. This week, we are talking about sensible meals. Sensible meaning C-E-N-T, sense, as in saving money, and also sense, S-E-N-S-E, as in they make sense for children. And our main contributor today will be our oldest sister, Lorraine. Lorraine published a book called Sensible Meals in 2009, and it outlines specific wonderful meals that you can cook on a small budget, but also while being healthy. She's going to tell us all about that, and we're so happy to be with her today. Who do we have on the call?
So I'm Lorraine. I'm from calling in from Idaho.
This is Nettie from Okinawa.
This is Mamie from Cache Valley.
Here's Becca from Manti.
This is Heidi from Orem.
All right, Lorraine, you are the expert, so take it away for sensible meals.
Okay, I'll see what I can do. I'll give a little context to why I wrote the book in the first place. When we had five kids, we decided to go back to graduate school. And my husband, going into the sciences, we knew he would have a student stipend of $2,000 a month, and that would be what we lived on for the years that we were in graduate school. So we worked very hard to be careful with our budget. When we graduated, we had eight kids, and we ended up living on his stipend for those years in graduate school. It taught us a lot of things, and we learned how to be very, very frugal. One of the things I guess we learned is how wonderful it is and feels to live so providently and so frugally. And it was a few years into graduate school that I looked around. There were other students. They had kids too. And I realized that they didn't seem to know how to live within their means. They ate differently. And we just didn't. And I realized that what I knew and how we lived was not how other people realized that what they could do. I'm not saying this very clearly, but I realized that I had learned growing up very frugal living from mama, and I incorporated that, and that others didn't always necessarily know that. I don't know if I'm making a lot of sense, but we lived those years without WIC, without Medicaid, without government programs, and we were careful with what we did, and I feel like this principle of provident living is one that applies to everybody. We are caretakers of this beautiful world that God has made for us. And the principles of being grateful for what we have, being frugal with what we've been given, not wasteful with the things we have, and to be thoughtful about how we affect our environment, how we're raising our children, is important. So that's what brought me to writing this book, and it just has some basic principles about how we saved money. And a lot of them, even though we're no longer in student situations, a lot of them we still use just because they were simple living habits that I feel like bring happiness.
Can I just jump in and second what you just said? I think the fact that we're stewards of the earth is an important principle to teach our children. We're stewards as parents, we're stewards of children, and to teach our children that they have a responsibility to take care of whatever we do have is a vital lesson. And it reminds me of Julie B. Beck's comment that mothers who know live on less and don't necessarily consume as much as we could consume. We're careful. and we're respectful of the earth and all of our resources.
Yeah, I like that. And then as I was pondering this tonight, I was remembering several years ago when you had a son, it seems like, who had an assignment about carbon footprints, and you had a big family. And I remember this whole conversation that we had about that. And I wondered, would you tell that story? It's always stuck with me. It was so profound.
Well, it actually happened this past year as well. Anytime any of our students are in a human geography class, the conversation always comes up about overpopulation in the world. And I can only speak from our experience, but it's always sometimes comical, according to the attitude of the teacher, that the birth rate is, you know, 1.2 or 2.4. I don't remember exactly what it is right now, but our family always outshines that birth rate. And then they talk about the effects of children on the environment and how much every human takes up and leaves this carbon footprint. And it finally occurred to me one day, because it bothered me a little bit, that people would look at our family and think, well, that's being irresponsible to have so many children. It occurred to me today that we live in the same size house as people who maybe have one or two children. We have six children in a bedroom, or, you know, three or four children in a bedroom. We still turn on that light and use the same amount of light. We take one car to get us all to school. So you can't really gauge a carbon footprint or using the Earth's resources by the number of people in a household. And so I think that's just something to be aware of. And it's also possible that when you have a large family, maybe you're even a little more careful about what you use and how you use up what the Earth offers.
Thank you. Yeah, I like that. And that has always remained with me. I've thought about that a lot. Henry Thoreau said, as you simplify your life, the laws of the universe will be simpler. Solitude will not be solitude. Poverty will not be poverty, nor weakness weakness. And as we come into what I think a lot of us potentially consider as maybe another recession, and inflation is going up, that hopefully these are some things that we did, and a lot of them still do, that can be helpful. So one thing I did was realize that processed is usually more expensive and less healthy. So if it has a lot of packaging, if it's individually packaged, I think of another way to do that. Instead of cheese sticks, cut up cheese slices. Instead of fruit snacks, have dried fruit that you've made yourself. So anytime that there's more packaging, see if you can get rid of it and do it simpler and cheaper. And if any of you have anything, please, please jump in. This isn't a one-man show. We all do this. I know, because I've been to your houses. Another thing I realized is that we have never eaten a lot of meat, but when we were really counting pennies, meat became completely unessential. We didn't buy it. And so in order to have a healthy diet, I focused my meals around things that I called fillers, rice or beans or grains. They're healthy, they add protein, they're cheap, and then we would have other dishes on the side. Maybe a little bit of meat in our gravy, and some vegetables and fruit on the side. We grew up making homemade bread. Mama made it, we all learned to make it, you all make it. We make it, we still make it. It's so much cheaper. I can make a loaf of bread for 50 cents, a whole wheat loaf that would be $4 at the store. So that's another thing. Any thoughts along those lines?
I just love the table that I think you share in the book, Larae, about how you can plan your week and use one main filler a night, and then, like you said, plan around it. To me, that was helpful to look at my month and decide how I was going to plan my menus that way, to be frugal and also to be healthy.
Yeah, thank you. So we would have like a potato night, and then a bean night, and then a rice night, and then a grains night. And I could think of something along those lines. Maybe we did Navajo tacos as our grains night, or we did baked potatoes as our potato night. Go ahead, Mame. Was that you?
Yeah, I was just going to say that we do the same thing, and it's so helpful. So we have a rice night, we have a pasta night, we have a potato night, we have a grains night. And the other thing that I have done is I just printed out a paper that was a month, showed a month, and then under each, like on Mondays, if it was the rice night, I listed all the different types of rice that I could think of. Zucchini stir fry, chicken and rice bake. So I had a lot of different ideas, like 10 ideas under each. And then when I'm making up my menu every week, I have that posted on my fridge, because half the battle is coming up with the idea. Once you have the idea, then it's easy to stick it in and make it. So I do love that. The other thing that I wanted to just point out is, like you said, Larae, the way we grew up gave us so many tips as to how to do this. I remember one day my friend was over visiting and we were having grilled cheese and tomato soup. And instead of making, well, the way that we did it was to just slice up the bread, put it on a cookie sheet, put some cheese on the top, and then broil it in the oven for a minute, and it was done. And my friend was just amazed. She was like, that was so easy. And you used less cheese and you didn't use any butter, and it was done so quick. So there are so many blessings to, like you said, to living frugally and simply. And it's nice to have tips and tricks as to how to do that.
Yeah, thank you. I think one of the blessings also to living frugally is that we teach our children to be grateful for things. They are not indulged. They don't really need that. It's easy to want to indulge them as a parent, but it's a conscious way to parent is to be less indulgent. And so I like that. One thing I learned is to make things look like more. So if you hand everybody an apple for dinner, that's a good fruit. But if you cut them up, you'll go through fewer apples. And not that apples aren't healthy and you want them to eat that, but when you're really trying to save, that's a good thing. Or if we're serving spaghetti, instead of putting it all in one pan, we have a bowl for the sauce and a bowl for the pasta. So that it looks like more. That's something. One thing we noticed is that buying bulk is not necessarily the cheapest thing. So even now, we do not have a Costco or a Sam's Club membership. I love Costco and I love Sam's Club. They're fun to walk into, but we don't have a membership because the cost of the membership we cannot make up with even the bulk prices that we're paying there. So, and that's us, but we also, our nearest ones are not really all that close. So maybe if we live next door to it, that might change our cost benefit. But when you're buying bulk, you have to really think about if that's really saving you. And sometimes it is. A lot of things I do buy in bulk. Do you guys buy things in bulk?
I would say that the one thing I get there is yeast. Yeast is so much more cost effective when you're at Sam's Club than anywhere else. That's our main thing. Or like the large spices, the sugar, the flour, things like that are easier to buy for us at Sam's.
Yeah. But you've compared and priced that out, what you use.
Right.
Yeah.
I also think I noticed we had a Costco in Tucson, but we haven't had one here in Manti. And so a couple years we paid for a Costco membership, but then I felt like we would use, you know, when we did have bulk, we would want to use it. You know, we would want to eat all the raisins, or we'd want to eat all the, you know, whatever it was that we bought that really was a good price, but we were eating more of it because we're like, oh, we bought this at such a good price. We're going to, you know, just enjoy it. So yeah, I think there's truth to that, that yeah. Sometimes that's not necessarily the least expensive way to go.
Yeah. We also do a lot of eating with the seasons. I know you all do this too. Whatever fruit is in season and is cheapest, that's what I buy for the fruit for the week. I don't buy grapes in December. That's not a cost-effective way to do things. And even with holidays and things, there are certain things we eat at certain times of the year. We eat tacos for Cinco de Mayo because that's when they're on sale and it's so fun. And we also buy case lot sales often, because things are a little cheaper there. We only drink water, which I know is foreign to a lot of people. In fact, when we were in school, I don't do this anymore, I noticed that whole milk was the same price as 2% or 1%. I actually learned that I could get about two or three more cups of milk if I added a little water to our whole milk.
maybe that's sounding a little depression era, but we were pretty frugal. And if I could get whole milk for the same cost as 2%, then that was a way for me to add a little bit more to it. I feel like we pay a lot for convenience, individually wrapped stuff, stuff we can take on the road, stuff we can take to soccer games and things. And with a little preparation, we can avoid paying for the packaging and the convenience and the individual servings.
Can I just share an idea that I've had along those lines? So with traveling, yeah, often you think, oh, you know, we want to get the fun thing. We want to stop at McDonald's, or we want to, you know, I don't know, be able to eat the concessions, you know, when we're at the ball game, or, you know, whatever. And I thought, what could I make that would be fun to eat, just like the hot dog at the concessions, or just like the fun lunch we would go get at McDonald's, you know? What could I make that we could just bring in the car? It would be a fraction of the cost, you know, rather than paying the money, you know, the expensive money to, you know, to buy these other things. So, I don't know, just a fun lunch that we've started doing is just crackers and cheese and fruit. So, you know, and we just do saltines. They're like less than $2 for a whole package. And we take our saltines with us, and we have a block of cheese that we can cut up. It's not something I have to take tons of time, and it's not necessarily hamburger either, you know, but it's something fun that is a treat for us when we're on the road, and it's not hard, and, you know, we can bring our carrot sticks, we can bring our fruit, and it's something fun that is exciting when we're, you know, when we don't want to spend a lot, you know, on the expensive foods, you know, that we would rather have. So anyway, just a fun idea. I think it's just fun to think outside the box and think, what could I do for just a little bit less, that would still be fun, that would still be a treat for us, and it's not going to take tons of time, but it's going to just be fun, and it'll help us not need to pay for all the expensive foods on the trip. So
I love that, Becca. That sounds so fun. I'm going to try it. Saltines and cheese. Sounds way fun.
I just want to insert here, our big kick right now is cheese and apples. That's what we all are eating right now. It's so yummy. But on the note of Becca, when you travel, it's easy to buy, you know, brown paper bags or baggies and make up the snacks ahead of time, the fun snacks. And instead of buying the popcorn at the pit stop or the rest stop, you can make the popcorn and put it in the little baggies to eat on the road, or like she said, the carrot sticks or the apples or whatever it is that you've gotten that's a special treat. You can divide it up ahead of time, individually wrapped, and that also makes it as fun as the individually packaged ones, but you're not paying for that processed packaged food.
That is great, man. That is great.
I love that. One way that we do travel foods is with our dehydrator. And one of the tips, I think, is to use what you have around you. So a lot of people have apples they're trying to get rid of. We'll take apples and dry them, and then they can go on road trips easily with us. We happen to have some very prolific plum trees at the moment. And so we dry prunes a lot, and they go on the road trips with us. So whatever you have, use and preserve and use it. And kids that help do that also are more likely to eat things like that, I've discovered.
Okay, we just did that on Friday night. We opened the fridge and took out all the little side bowls of leftover applesauce and a little bit of leftover taco meat here and the last pickles in the jar. And we just put out trays for everyone, and we ate up all the leftovers in our fridge and all the half-eaten jars of whatever. Use what you have. And we had a full meal. It was great. The kids were tentative at the beginning, but we all finished full.
Then going along with that, we like to use leftover fruits to make smoothies. So in the morning, I'll look in the fridge and pull out like the half of banana that came home in somebody's lunchbox that wasn't eaten, or the apple that's half rotten, but the other half is still good. So just any little thing that I can save and put in a smoothie. We also love to throw in a handful of spinach and a carrot. and it's so good for you, and it cleans out the fridge. And James is really good. My husband James is really good at using leftovers in scrambled eggs. So when he makes the scrambled eggs in the morning, you'll find a little bit of stir-fried rice or some broccoli or whatever was left over from dinner. He'll throw it in the eggs, and it tastes so good. It's a good way to use it up. The other way to use up savory foods is in soups. My only problem with that is that usually then I make so much that there are leftovers of that. But if you can just use up what's in your fridge, I have talked to people that feel like they don't have the ability to use leftovers. But if you can use leftovers and get a whole meal out of it where you don't have to buy fresh ingredients to make something, it saves a lot of money.
Yeah, I agree. And I always tell my kids, this is a once in a lifetime meal. You will never have it again because we don't, whatever's in it, we probably won't have exactly the same leftovers.
Can I insert a little bit here? I think I said this on the last episode, but I just have to say it again. Living here next door to the Okinawa farmers and the people who've lived here their whole lives has just really taught us how simple life can be. Our neighbor, who's almost 90, told us that the first 15 years of his life, the only thing he can remember eating is sweet potatoes. And he's lived almost 100 years now. He's healthy and strong, and he saw nothing wrong with that. And so I think we can live simply. And I just love to watch how they, like you said, Larray, they eat what's in season. Well, the sweet potatoes are on. We're eating sweet potatoes. Well, the Goya's on. We're eating Goya. The papayas are fresh. Now we're eating papaya. Eat what's in season. Eat what you have. And they're not running to Costco every week, and they're living a lot longer than most Americans are.
Okay, well, not. So our neighbor is Mexican. And she's taught us, she's told me all about her upbringing. She lived on this ranch, and they ate, she's told us they ate beans and made tortillas every day. And I've just thought, wow, like people really live like that. That they just live these simple, simple lives and just have a few things at their disposal to eat. And you're getting real nutrients, and you're getting the real thing from the earth, you know, the real, the real nourishment. Anyway, so I love looking at different cultures, Nan, like you were saying that, yeah, the Japanese have their simple ways. The Mexicans have their simple ways. If we learn from these simple ways, look, you know, look what we could learn.
And they're not overeating either. I mean, that's another, we talked about that a little bit last week too.
And another example of the same thing is whenever I feel the weight of thinking through a whole meal or providing a whole meal for my family in just a few minutes, I am reminded of Heidi, the book Heidi, where she just lives on the mountain with grandfather, and all they eat is what the goats, the milk, the cheese, and the bread. That's all they have the whole summer, and helps her to be healthy and strong. So we really don't need a big, huge meal. We just need to fill our tummies with something nutritious and simple.
Okay, I'm jumping in for Katie since Katie's not on, because she talked about one time she had to take a meal. She didn't have to. She wanted to take a meal to someone. And she thought, I better make up a big thing of mac and cheese and do all these sides. And her husband said, that's a really rich meal. You could also do something simple. And she ended up making pumpkin soup and bread and taking him that. So I've thought about that a lot. I don't have to approach the meal and think it's got to be this big spread every time. Our bodies can probably live with a little bit simpler nutrients and even portions.
So on that note, can I just share one of our favorites? Our favorite, I don't know. Sometimes I think, oh, we should be a little more extravagant. But our favorite dinner, the last, I wanted to say like 6 months, is lentils and rice. That's what we call it. And it's lentils and rice and a few spices. A little bit of chicken or beef bouillon, and you just put cheese on it. And we usually have spinach and vegetables with it. And it's a one pot deal, and it's so good, and it's so filling, and it's so nutritious. You can feel the nutrition. It's amazing. It's amazing. And Ray talked about beans. I just want to give a plug for beans. We are so amazed by them. We eat them several times a week. I think legumes are just packed full of nutrition, and they are the cheapest thing on the shelf right now. And it's so amazing to just, you know, you can have your vegetables. I don't know. Anyway, I just have to say, we just love it. And our kids love it. That's amazing, too, because people talk about, oh, picky eaters. Our kids love this. And you can do it with tacos. You can do it with a taco salad. You can just eat it by itself. Anyway, just so maybe I'll have to, if I get a minute, I'll stick it in the, I don't know, in the comments or something, yes. Our recipes. Anyway.
For sure, Becca. You've totally convinced me. I'm buying more beans this week.
Sorry. I'm so excited about it.
I want that recipe, too. We also eat a lot of beans. In fact, studies show that beans have more protein and healthier protein than meat. So they're cheaper, they're healthier, and there's just, you can't go wrong. And they're filling. So beans are a much healthier protein than any kind of meat there is. And people worry about their protein and their filling. So there's nothing not to like about beans and lentils and all the legumes. Thank you. And brown rice. I put on a plug for brown rice. I know Nen lives in Japan where it's all white rice, and that's lovely. But we eat brown rice, and we have learned to really like the flavor of that, too. In fact, there are tons of different rices, and we've tried a lot, and they're all really fun. So, I want to jump in.
Wait, can I just quick add? Some people don't realize you can cook your own beans. Because that's a very great thing. It's nice to have canned beans and to buy, you know, cans of beans. But it's so cost effective and easy to cook your own beans. And so, and really, especially when you're cooking in quantities, and we usually are. Anyway, it's a great way to go. So.
I agree with that, too. And I think people are afraid of the complicated process of soaking and thinking about it 24 hours in advance. But I also think that most kitchens now own an Instapot or something similar. You can cook beans in a regular preparing dinner time. So it's not something to be afraid of. And lentils cook up much faster.
Yes.
So yeah. You don't have to just do beans. Lentils are also a really healthy legume. Okay, I wanted to jump into, because this is a little bit of a soapbox for me, picky eaters and snacking, which Becca just mentioned. So many people say, well, my kid just won't eat that, or my kid doesn't like this, or my kid won't do that. And I want to say, but I never do, because I'm a very nice person. I always try to empathize, but I want to say people in Africa aren't dying out because their kids will only eat fruit snacks or dino chicken nuggets. Like their kids are as picky as we let them be. That's the bottom line. If you don't want picky kids, don't let them be picky. And the way to get over that is to quit snacking. We feel like we have to eat 24/7. We feel like our kids have to be always, they can't be hungry. And I also feel like a good chunk of most people's food budget is spent on snack foods. And that is amazing to me. We're feeding them 24/7 and they rarely have a sit down actual healthy meal because they're not hungry when it's time for dinner. Kids don't need snacks. We don't need snacks. In fact, I read there's lots of research out there that says if we were to cut our calories, we would live longer. It's been shown in animals. It's been shown in humans. If we could cut our calories to about 1,200 to 1,400 for an average person per day, our longevity would skyrocket. We do not need snacks, and they're usually not super healthy. Dinner is better.
Great.
So that's mine.
Yes. Hear, hear. I love this, and I'm excited to play this episode for my kids, too, but when my kids went to Japanese school, there are not morning snacks. They eat at noon. And boy, my kids are hungry by noon, and they were willing to eat whatever was served, even if they didn't recognize it. And it was always cooked right there at the school, super healthy, vegetable-laden types of food. But yes, if we could cut our calories, we would live longer. We have living evidence all over the place in Japan.
just reminded me of a funny story when my oldest kids were like 5, 4, and 3. And they were turning up their nose at something, and I was not in a good mood. And I told them that they would start eating oatmeal 3 times a day. So I think for like a day and a half, I served oatmeal. I served it for breakfast. I served it for lunch. I served it for dinner. And after that 36 hours, they were ready to eat whatever I put in front of them. Maybe not the best way to do it, but I haven't ever had any problems since then. So it worked.
I agree. I think sometimes that's what it takes. My daughter was talking about her toddler the other day and how she won't eat anything. Like, she'll go a whole day with nothing. And I had to tell her some of the best advice I ever got was with my oldest child or two from a parenting book, that toddlers can go whole days without eating anything. And then they'll eat you out of house and home after a couple of days. And that's just a cycle they have. I feel like so many parents are coaxing, begging, pleading kids to eat. And we don't have to. They won't let themselves starve. We just wait till they're ready. And then they'll learn to be frugal. Plus, it's a good principle. This principle of learning, I can't think of the word, self-restraint. Maybe that's what I want to say. Self-restraint, self-discipline is huge. And it's one that we are losing in our society. This is a good way to enforce that. Anything else about picky eaters? I know none of you have picky eaters. So gardening was one of the other principles that I feel like is very helpful for frugal living. Gardening is not necessarily cheap. But it teaches us principles of appreciating what we have. Living off the land, putting some work into things. And then I have in my book a whole chapter on menus and grocery lists and how I made my running list and my weekly list and my menus. But I have to admit that now I just go to ChatGPT. Go ahead, Meg.
Well, I wanted you to not skip over the gardening so fast. Oh, okay. If I can just put in a plug for gardening. When we moved to Cache Valley just 7 years ago, we now live down the road from Lindsay, my sister-in-law, who's married to our brother Doug, and she is a canner. And for the first time, I still had littles at home, but I had somebody to help me, and I started canning. And we can peaches and pears and salsa and jams and tomatoes, and the list goes on. And I just want to say that it does take a little extra time, but it feels so good to use what you've been given, and that's what my kids ask for. If we have a jar of homemade jam, they'll choose it every time over store-bought jam. And that goes for everything, just like the homemade bread. It tastes better, and it's better for you.
Well, no, the kids get so excited about when the produce comes in. I'm sure you guys have seen that too. And we've never been amazingly successful at gardening, but any little bit that comes in, the kids get so excited. They get so excited to see the tomatoes, you know, the first tomatoes on the tomato plant, or, you know, how big the pumpkin's getting, or when it starts to turn orange, or, you know, they get so excited. We actually found some extra onions that we hadn't dug up last year, still growing in the garden this year. And it was so exciting to, you know, all the kids. I don't know. It's just such a neat experience for the kids to have their own garden and to be able to see things grow. They love it.
I feel like Heidi needs to talk about this too, because her kids are so good at eating fresh vegetables and fresh fruits.
And at growing things. I think Mia started an herb garden.
Well, we did plant the seeds, but nothing has grown. But we did, we have started garden boxes, so that's been exciting for us this year. We don't have a huge yard, and so the dreams I've had of a big garden my whole life aren't really possible. But we tried garden boxes, and Mia did read about square foot gardening, and we're trying it this year, and it is so fun. We've been able to plant, usually I only plant tomatoes because we are limited in space, and to me that's like one of the really the only reason to grow something is the tomatoes, because everything else tastes pretty much the same from what you get at the store, but not tomatoes. So all of the limited space we have is spent with tomatoes. So it's been so fun because we've been able to try lettuce and corn and peas and beans. And so they're just now popping up, and it is really fun. And I hope that they continue to grow and that they actually produce something. It has been really fun watching it.
And Heidi, I don't know, just thinking about our whole conversation, I thought you're so good at putting fresh things on your table, like several fresh things on your table. Every time I'm there, I'm like, wow, Heidi made a salad and she cut up oranges and there's apples over here and, you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm so impressed. It's just inspired me that I want to do more with our fresh things, you know, with a variety at our dinner table.
That is something I've tried to do. And I don't know that it belongs in this conversation about being frugal, because really it's not a cheap way to eat. But I just have loved being able to provide fresh things. And I love that my kids will ask for the fresh over the other, but the fruits and vegetables really aren't filling. And so we do go through quite a few fruits and vegetables, but I do love eating the rainbow and having multiple. I always have a fruit and vegetable at every meal, and sometimes hopefully multiple fruits and vegetables. And I do love being able to eat fresh. I feel better eating fresh. But it is not as filling. It's true.
Okay, so you just said a fruit and vegetable every meal, Hides. So do you do it for breakfast too?
Sorry, not breakfast. But for breakfast, we do oatmeal with fruit in it, but no vegetable. Sorry, I'm okay.
But then lunch and dinner, you do both. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could always throw in a sweet potato.
I just go load my cart with just whatever's on sale. I just go and buy. So if apples are on sale, I just buy tons of apples or cucumbers, or I just buy the sale and try and buy a ton of, you know, if it's carrots, we eat tons of carrots that week for lunch and dinner, or sweet potatoes or broccoli or whatever's on sale. And I just, hopefully the sales rotate and we just buy a ton of whatever it is that week that's on sale at the store.
I just want to jump in with one other thought on gardening. In today's world, it's sad to say that some kids have never gardened and some kids have never planted a seed or tended a plant or harvested anything. But it's so important that kids understand where food comes from. And this is maybe even a conversation for another episode about gardening. But it's foundational to know where our livelihood comes from. And so any type of gardening we can do with children is so healthy and so educational as well.
Plus, I think the law of the harvest is an eternal principle as well. If we will reap what we sow in our lives, in all aspects of it. And I think that gardening with kids helps teach that. And it's also a fun family activity. We'll do it for family nights. We're going to go weed the garden. The kids don't love it, but they'll remember it and they're learning. And after we've been out there for 5 or 10 minutes, they forget to be mad and they're having a great time.
We don't have a garden, like I said, but we do have fruit trees. And I will say one wonderful lesson we learned from fruit trees is that God creates everything in abundance. The fruit comes on and it comes on huge and it comes on fast. And there's no way you can use all of the fruit that it produces. And it's just beautiful. Everything God has created is enough and to spare. And we weren't meant to use it all ourselves. And it is a great opportunity as a family too, to be able to share the abundance that God has blessed us with.
That's so beautiful, Heidi. Thanks for sharing.
Okay, I'll go back to really quickly some menus and lists. Because we do a main filler every day of the week, potatoes, rice, beans, grain, pasta, it makes my whole month easy to plan, because we could say like every Monday will be potatoes. Every Tuesday, we're going to do a rice dish. And it's easy to put a whole month's menu together and then decide what I need for the month in a master list. And that's not very hard, but it does mean sitting down and figuring that out every month and then pricing it out. I knew, well, and I still know, we have a budget. I have a husband who's awesome at spreadsheets, and he knows every penny we've spent for our whole lives. And that may sound very limiting, but it's actually very freeing to know when our budget has gone up, when we have needed to
at the end of the year, we'll walk through it and he'll say, okay, we maybe need to add to our food budget this year, or we were right on, let's keep it there, but maybe we need to add to a different budget. It's really a great idea to keep a budget and know where we're at financially. I recommend that. My menu, though, now, I often just get on ChatGPT and say, I want some vegetarian or vegan menu for 6 people for 5 nights of the week that include fruits and vegetables and things that are on sale at the store. I mean, AI is absolutely amazing that way. It will spit out a menu. It will give me recipes. It will give me a grocery list. And I can even say, please make it cost effective or make it family friendly or make it 30-minute meals. You can put any parameters on it and it will hand you a menu for however long you want. ChatGPT is awesome. But I do recommend having a menu, having a plan, knowing what you're going to make. Because I feel like, I don't know, you're all moms, but for me, most of the battle, more than half of the battle, is just thinking, what am I going to make for dinner? What have I got? What do I feel like I can accomplish? And that is just so hard. If I'm walking in the door knowing this is what we're having and I have the ingredients for it, the making is the easy part.
Ray, I would also add to that I'll come up with a week's menu at a time, and it's not limiting. Like, I then have 6 meals, and if I come home on Tuesday, I don't want to make the pasta tonight. I want to make the rice. I already have the ingredients, and I can switch it up, but I have at least 6 meals in my mind that I can draw from.
Yeah, I love that. That's also very freeing.
And maybe, can I just put in a little plug here? I don't know if anyone, I know Katie, I think Katie was the one that referred me to her. Has anyone ever heard of the Food Nanny? She's on, let's see, her show is on BYU TV. And so I watch her once in a while when I just need some new ideas or some new motivation to get dinner on the table. And what she always says, waiting till 4 or 5 o'clock at night to decide what to have for dinner is a recipe for disaster. It's too late because you're just going to be in a mess. But planning ahead saves you from all of that. And anyway, she just has some great thought. Anyway, so if anyone wants to look her up, anyway, she does a good job.
Thank you, Becca. I have one last principle that I feel like is really important to living frugally, and that is generosity. Albert Schweitzer said, "What the world lacks most today is men who occupy themselves with the needs of other men. In this unselfish labor, a blessing falls on both the helper and the helped." And I think the Bible tells us that too. Do unto others as you would have them to you, and help people around you. When we were in graduate school, counting every penny, being so careful, we also tried to see outside of ourselves. And that was sometimes hard when we were so careful with what we had. But I always felt like I can give away a loaf of homemade bread. That's easy for me. I can make something and give it away. And we learned that as we were generous to others, it also was returned. And I think that is a principle of the universe, that when we give, we also receive. And being generous brings satisfaction with what we own. When we become selfish, we become unhappy with what we have. So giving is part of the joy of frugality, I believe. Any thoughts on that?
Nettie has a story. Do you remember, Nettie? This is a story from your early marriage when you guys were so strapped and you had peaches that you canned. And then do you remember the rest of the story? You should share it.
So it was our first year of marriage. We were both students. We had zero money. And we asked Mark's grandpa if we could come and can the peaches on his tree. And he said, "You can." But then the next day when we got there, when we went to get the peaches, He said, another cousin called me yesterday, and she's come in the past sometimes to get peaches. I didn't think she wanted them this year, but she does want them. And it was so hard for me. I thought, oh my gosh, we've just picked all these peaches, and now I'm going to have to give them away. And we really needed the peaches to get through the winter. That's really what we were eating through the winter. But I knew that the right thing to do would be to share the peaches with the cousin. And so I said, well, I've already canned all the peaches. I know she wants some. So I took half of my canned peaches, which was so hard because of all the work I'd already put in. And I drove them to this other cousin's house, dropped them off, tried to be happy about it. And then I drove home. And as I pulled up, I was so shocked that on my front porch was a massive box of peaches. And one of my neighbors, unbeknownst to me, had a bunch of peaches on a tree and was trying to get rid of them. And I was just amazed at how quickly, when I was willing to be generous, the Lord reciprocated. And I had more peaches than I had to begin with. And I canned those and we had plenty of peaches to get through the winter. Thanks for the reminder, Mamie.
That is so neat. Well, and just a thought that I've had, I don't know, this occurred to me a month or two ago, but there was a week where I feel like there were just like two people that needed meals that week, just friends, you know. It wasn't like I was on the committee, you know, the humanitarian committee or anything, but, or the compassionate service, that's what it's called. Anyway, but I just thought, oh, these people need meals, or, you know, I want to take them a meal. And I remember just a day or two after I did these meals, someone called me and was like, hey, I just have this leftover, you know, or I made too much of this soup or something. We want to bring some down to you. Or I can't even remember the exact situation, but it happened a couple of times. It would be like within the week that I had taken somebody a meal that someone else would call and say, hey, I just think I'll drop by with this. Is that okay? And I just thought, I wonder if that is really connected. That when we are willing to take a meal, when we're willing to do something for, you know, someone that we know needs something, Heavenly Father wants to put the same thing back in our lap, you know? Anyway, so just your story of the peaches made me think of that, Nan. Thanks for sharing that.
Generosity is a true principle, and I'm glad you brought it up, Larae, at the end of your list, because it also teaches our children to be generous and grateful for what we have.
Thank you, and the needs of others. I think that's all I have. Does anybody have any other thoughts about anything, or sensible, or frugality?
Sorry, I just...
Go ahead, give Becca.
Too much talking this time, but this is a subject I think about a lot. But I did want to share an experience. We did our student years in Tucson, Arizona, for 6 years when Kevin was doing his graduate work there. And that was a real refiner's fire for us. And then we were blessed with his job here, that we are so thankful for here in Sanpete County. And then about a year or two after we moved, we got the chance to go back down to Tucson. And it was fun to go see our home. It was so fun, you know, to go see our ward again, our friends, you know, the places that we had loved. But we, you know, just one night we, you know, we needed to stop for some groceries, and we stopped at one of the grocery stores that we had always shopped at. And I just have to say, it was like a sacred experience to me, because as I had worked through our menus, I had worked through our eating and through those years, I just knew Heavenly Father had blessed us and had taken care of us. And to walk into those grocery stores, which sounds so silly, but it was such, I just remembered all of the prayers and all of the, you know, all of the thoughts that I had gone through with, you know, with how we spent our money. And it was a spiritual experience. It was the most special place I feel like we went on that trip, to go back and see these places where I had shopped and I had shopped and I had shopped and I had shopped, you know, trying to feed our family during those years. And I just want to say, at this point in motherhood, one of the biggest testimonies I have is that Heavenly Father provides for his children. And I just know that he provides for us. If we're willing to do the work and make the sacrifice, he can make it happen. He does make it happen. And it's he's going to work with us to do it. And I just wanted to share that at the end. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Becca, that I love was that so testimony, beautiful.
And I just want to back it up with my own, that I know that the Lord helps us when we come to him. Sorry. I also know that he can teach us if we go to him and say, how can I do this? Give me an answer. There were so many times that we didn't know where else to turn, and there was always an answer. There was always comfort. There was always help. There was always something else that we could do to make it happen. And I add my testimony to yours, and also add that the Lord is there for us and will teach us when we ask for pointers and guidelines.
Thank you, Becca. That was just so beautiful. I think your testimony also couples so well with Heidi's about the earth is abundant, and there's enough and to spare, and the earth is the Lord and all things therein. It's amazing how the Lord provides for us and can turn the loaves and fishes literally into what we need, especially when we are trying to be generous with others and also trying to be good stewards of everything that we have. Larray, I tried to write down your comments, and I also got my own copy of Sensible Meals out to follow along during the episode today. I carry this book with me everywhere. I even brought it to Japan, one of the few books I brought. Do you want to give a rundown of the principles that you talked about?
In a nutshell, a summary of tips I have at the back of the book, but also mostly just what we have done. Go to the store less often, make menus, estimate your costs, use rice and beans and potatoes, have a grain, a filler that's main, and then fill in with the food groups, healthy vegetables and fruits. Before you buy things, decide if you can do it cheaper yourself. Make your own bread, so much cheaper. Buy things in season. Compare prices before you buy in bulk. Definitely preserve anything that falls your way. Fruits, gardening, freeze things. Just be really frugal with things. Drink water and be generous. Simple and generous, I think.
Next week, we'll have our final episode of this trilogy about mealtime magic.
Thanks for tuning into Sister Share. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you again next week.